Our Bibles to Matthew chapter 2.
Hey, Steve.
Yeah.
Merry Christmas. On the wall.
There's a clock. Yay! Is it our old clock? It looks like it. Maybe they found it. Oh, that's great. You know, Jeff, if you and Susan got together, you'd have a whole person. I mean, head and shoulder, knees and whatever, you know. Anyway. There's many ways of looking at that. Okay. As we have been moving through very slowly in our chronology, we come to the next stage of the Christmas story, which was absolutely perfect timing, considering the time of year for us as we look at this. And this is our very familiar passage on the wise men as they have come to visit the child. The text reads, "Now after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem." And of course we have to stop and ask all the wonderful questions. As one guy said, where they came from, how long had they been traveling, how many were there, what was their rank when they went, all of those questions are left unsolved. They glide into the story, they present their silent adoration, and as silently steal away. The tasteless medieval tradition knows all about them. There were three of them. Really? We do know that, right? There are three. No, we don't know that. We talked about this last week. They were kings. Where does it say that? It does not. There are only two kings mentioned in this passage. King Herod, verse 1. And in verse 2, where is he who's been born king of the Jews? Jesus. There's only two kings, so we can sing the song, "We Two Kings." Anyway, but there's no concept of the fact that there were three. Only says that they were from the east. Well, that could mean they were from Asia. Could mean they're from India. There was a Portuguese epic published in 1572 that claims that they were Hindu Brahmins. They were Hindus showing up. That was a little stretchy. Most likely they were Persian. We get the idea of the Medes and the Persians. But one thing that struck me when I thought about that, if you remember our study of, in the Apocrypha, we were studying about Rome, and then Egypt, you know, Egypt and Israel, and then there was a new enemy of Rome over here. They weren't called the Medes and the Persians. Anybody remember what they were called? They're the Parthians. The Parthians was a merger of the Medes and Persians in the Mesopotamian area, and Rome never was able to conquer them. Alexander did. Alexander conquered that region all the way to the Indus River. But then they pushed back later, and they were such a power. We had, I think, three or four different Roman emperors or generals getting defeated up in the Babylonian area during the time of the Roman Empire. We think the Roman Empire covered the whole world. Well, it didn't. It covered the... They actually went north and west for their conquering. When they tried to go east, they ran up against the Parthians. So technically, these wise men are from an enemy region. I've never thought of that before. They're coming from an area that they're in constant battle. Even though Caesar Augustus has Pax Romana and there's peace in the land, there's this somewhat tactic treaty between Rome and the Parthians at this time, and probably then allowed for the trade and for someone like these men to come in without being attacked. I just thought that was kind of interesting. There are a few absurd theories that have floated around.
Just a few?
Just a few. One is that these are the descendants of Ham, Shem, and Japheth, the sons of Noah. That's why in some paintings, one of them is depicted as being Ethiopian. So you have one from Ethiopia, Balthazar. We have their names, by the way. You do know that, right? We have one from Persia. His name was Melchor. And we have one from India. His name was Caspar. And I've seen it, Caspar with a K, Caspar with a C, and Caspar with a G. As Gasper. Like, okay, well, I don't know which one is which. And if you have the money, and you visit Cologne, Germany, in 1100 AD, they discovered three skulls. And they are now on display in Cologne, Germany, in a church, and they're the three kings. So you can pay and go look at these three skulls. Highly doubtful, ended up in Germany. It's possible they could have ended up anywhere, for that matter. I am one of the authors I'm currently working with is a archaeologist adventurer, kind of an Indiana Jones kind of guy. He's done books on finding Noah's Ark. He's done books on he actually has changed archaeological thinking about where Mount Sinai is. It's fascinating stuff. Well, his current thing is discovering that there's a different location in Jerusalem for the temple than what we normally think. Normally we think it's where the Dome of the Rock is, which is why it can't be rebuilt. And he just came back from a trip in Jerusalem and got underneath into their own diggings in the head of Jerusalem's archaeology near the Gihon Springs, which is land that the Jews own, and saying, this is actually where the temple was. The temple where the Dome of the Rock was, the Fortress Antonia, where the Roman soldiers lived. And saying they could actually rebuild the temple tomorrow if they wanted to. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. His next project, yes, sorry.
What's his name?
His name is Bob Cornuke. Cornuke. And you can Google him and go watch his YouTube videos. And he's a fascinating guy. He even wears the hat that looks like Indiana Jones. It's all part of branding. Interesting guy, interesting fellow. But his next project that he's working on is finding the burial place of the three kings. And it's in Africa. He believes that they followed Mary and Joseph into Egypt and then settled there. That's an interesting theory. None of it can be proved, but it's all very fun and interesting for Sunday school classes and for, you know, coffee conversation.
I should sell a few books.
It could. Yeah, it could. You think about the idea of kings is actually the Greek word magi. That's why it has wise men. Magi or magus is where we get our word magic. There are magi mentioned frequently in the Old Testament. In fact, Daniel chapter 2 verse 48, it says, Daniel became the head prefect of the wise men of Babylon. Wise men meaning magi of Babylon. We have in Acts chapter 9, a guy named Simon, who was a magician, and he's known as Simon Magus, and because he performed acts of magic or sorcery, he then is saved. He observes the disciples laying on of hands, and the Spirit comes in, and he says, I want that. Here, let me give you $10. And so you can teach me. And Peter just really scolds him for that kind of attitude. So we have the famous Simon Magus in Acts. John Milton described these men as star-led wizards. So you think, why are they called wise men? What does this mean? Well, if you recall, well, maybe you don't recall. What was the religion of the Persians?
Astrology?
Zoroastrianism?
That's it. Yeah, that's the big $10 word, which I have to look at to spell. Zoroastrianism. Zoroastrianism. This particular religion is monotheistic, believes in sacrifices, the sacrificial system, using blood as the atonement. They had a hereditary priesthood. Sounds a little bit like Jewish, doesn't it? They believed that certain animals were unclean, and they really believed in the struggle between good and evil. You might think, well, so they're Jews. No, they're not Jews, not at all. In fact, Darius the Great, the king of Persia, during the exile, this is while the Jews are in exile, he declared that Zoroastrianism would be the religion of the people, of everybody, and it became their main religion. It did not get supplanted until Islam. So it was the religion of the Mesopotamian area and of the Persian people, that would be Iran and Iraq of today, for 1,000 years until Islam came in and pushed it aside. It's still practiced, but in a very small segment. In fact, they're heavily persecuted in India right now for their beliefs. But what makes them very different is they believed in sorcery and the occult. They believed in the darker side of the spiritual world. They practiced sorcery, astrology, divination, witchcraft, and other occult practices. So that's why there was this separation between Judaism and Zoroastrianism. So these wise men, part of the wise men activity is to watch the stars, because the stars would speak. I came across this interesting little tidbit. If you look in verse 2 of your text, it says, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose." The word star is the Greek word a star, aster. Actually, it's an E. A group of stars . Can you guess what the group of stars word would be based on this?
Astro.
And if you read, that is the word law. So law of the stars is astronomy. Astrologos. Astrology is the word of the stars. So you have the law of the stars and the meaning of the stars. That's the difference. Astronomy is the study of the movement of the stars. There's nothing wrong with that. We can look at them and go, okay, it's very scientific and very sterile. It's those who say it means this because this and this and this and this comes together, and if your sign is rising in the west today, don't drive your car. That's astrologos. Astronomy is the difference. Fascinating. It all comes back to this singular word, which is also intriguing, that the Greek text talks about a singular star. It does not talk about a group of stars. Which then brings us to our fun little exercise of, so what was this star that they saw? And we in our Western mentality, we want it all to make sense and be absolutely defined. I made a joke the other day that the song First Noel is completely wrong. Remember when I said that? It says, They look at upon a star in the east. Well, then why didn't they go to China? Okay, that was my joke. Thing is, stars rise in the east. And in the King James Bible, it says, and they saw his star in the east. Because the Greek word there is en Anatole, which means in rising. So the English translator said the star was in rising, which means it comes from that direction and moves that way and sets over there, just like the sun does. So that means before they're going to bed or they're looking at their stars, they're looking this direction. And they're watching it move across the sky, and they're thinking that points us this direction because it's moving. So the movement of the stars, you go into history of planetary investigations and all that, and we come across a guy named Joseph Kepler, one of the great astronomers of all time. He and another mathematician, for some reason, wanted to figure out the mathematical movement of these stars, because as they observed them, they would look at it here, and the next year they would look at it and that star was here. It's the same star, but it's incrementally in a different spot. And they're thinking, well, why is that from year to year? That must mean the stars are moving, and maybe we're moving, and we have a guy named Galileo doing his stuff, and we have, this is that time, that era, built on each scientific ability. So Kepler thought, they actually did all these mathematical formulas, and they were taking stars and drawing orbits. So they would take an orbit, they would take the Earth, and they would go, well, the stars are moving around like this. But nothing worked mathematically. It just didn't make sense. They spent years with their calculations, and they didn't have a pocket calculator. You know, this is before calculus. They were inventing this stuff at this time, right? So, it says that the story goes, is that one night, Joseph Kepler had a brainstorm, and he went, wait a minute. The stars move in an elliptical circle. He then began to run his numbers, and it all fit. It was this eureka moment in scientific discovery. He actually wrote the first law of planetary movement, the second law of planetary movement, in 1609. And in 1619, 10 years later, he wrote the third law of planetary movement. Those three laws are still used today by all scientists, NASA, they all use it. Everybody who observes the stars uses these three laws of the elliptical movement of the stars. So he thought, by doing this, we then know the static movement of every planet, every star, everything in the sky, and we can say this is the way it is today, and we can figure out what it looked like 10 years ago. Which means we can look at it, what it looked like 100 years ago, and I can figure out what the Star of Bethlehem looked like. So he spent 3 years with calculations and all of this trying to figure out what the stars would look like on 0 BC. And it didn't work. None of his planets aligned, none of the stars aligned, and he actually passed. He actually died, never figuring it out. Why? Because he was looking at the wrong year. The whole debate on what was Jesus' birth, which we have talked about before, you know, was it 3 BC, 4 BC, 6 BC? We're not quite sure. But already you can see that Kepler didn't go back far enough. And it messed up the whole formula. And he was distressed, he was frustrated. He was a very religious man, and he was doing this as a way to honor and help prove scriptures and all sorts of other things, and what would it look like? I just find that kind of almost sad, but also fascinating that someone would spend so much of their life and time in what might be seen as an arcane pursuit. You've heard of Strong's exhaustive concordance,
And there was the very first concordance was ever developed was a guy named Cruden, C-R-U-D-E-N. Alexander Cruden. Think about creating a concordance of the Bible by hand. Cruden ended up in an insane asylum. He went nuts. It drove him to distraction. And you think about this singular pursuit in trying to create something and it doesn't really have the benefit that you're hoping for. It just made me think of that when I thought of Kepler. So then what is the star? Well, goodness, it could be almost anything. Someone said, oh, it was a comet. All right, well, we don't have a record of any comet during any of those years of between 6 BC and 2 BC. Someone say, well, it's a meteor or a meteor shower. Group of stars would be a meteor shower, but that's really fleeting. That happens in an instant or 3 or 4 nights. Isn't there supposed to be some big display happening? Is it this week?
It already happened. I mean, okay. It's still happening.
Okay. Yeah. Apparently Friday was the big day. And of course you have to go outside of Phoenix to even watch it because you walk outside your own backyard and it's like, would you turn off the lights? You know, I can't see anything. So anyway, but it's fleeting. So the idea of these wise men following a star, they didn't catch American Airlines for their trip. They got on animals and traveled across country, probably up to 1,000, maybe 1,500 miles. That's not going to take you 2 or 3 days. This is going to take you months. All of the depictions of magi in art, and I'm talking ancient art, not current or medieval art. I'm talking back to the base reliefs that you find dug into walls and stela and things like that. They are shown as men with long cone hats and not riding on camels. They rode on Arabian horses or on Persian steeds. That's how they moved around. The caravans moved because of the camel being the pack animal, but it creates multiple theories, and you can imagine how many I've read, that these men, whoever they were, however many they were, probably moved in, not in a caravan, because that would have been too slow, but they probably moved with an armed retinue, up to 300 soldiers. And they were wealthy enough to be able to afford that, and they were on this journey and this track. Let's see, one said it would be in a nova, so an exploding star. And the idea of an exploding star, yes, it shines very bright and then ultimately goes away, but all of those are recorded. There are so many different astronomers. Ancient astronomers are constantly watching the sky all night in all different parts of the world, and there's no record of anything of that significance at this time. Then the last theory, which is the most common one, is that it was a movement of planets where they were, you know, they kind of moved together, kind of like, you know, when the moon is in the seventh house and Jupiter aligns with Mars, and peace will guide the planets and love will steer the stars and the suns will come out and play basketball. Sorry, a little bit of Age of Aquarius for you. Because that's real. Anyway, but the common thought is that it was an alignment of planets. Now, I found this. I'll walk it around. You see the crescent moon, and you see the two stars? This was taken in the Philippines in 2008. Now, if that was in the sky, that would be like a sign. We need to go that way. Especially to the Cheshire Cat grinning there in the sky with his eyes up here. That's just one little simple thing. Obviously, the photographer saw it, and he probably moved around or wherever until he got the right picture, took the snapshot.
Other things, in fact, there was one thing that came up in this book. There is a photograph. Notice down here. Notice how the three planets align. This is in one of these, what, the solariums, where they show the stars. What do they call it?
Planetarium.
Planetarium. Where they have this, this is a picture from one of these planetariums moving back to around 3 BC, and over here is the actual alignment of the stars of what it might have looked like at that time. That's interesting. You know what? We have no idea. We have absolutely no idea. And what's even more important, it doesn't matter. What matters is that they were inspired and probably led by God to find this. Something was up there that said, we need to go find it. So I thought, I was reading along, and there was an allusion in one of the articles that I was reading to another event of magi visiting a king. I thought, what? Because the first thing you think of, oh, it had to be Halley's Comet. You know, because that's a big idea, a big thing. Imagine back in those eras, the superstition, we always read about them in books or whatever, that when Halley's Comet came, you know, all sorts of crazy things would happen because it was so unusual and so big and so long and obvious. Halley's Comet comes around, what, every 78 years, 75 years, something like that. Problem is, we know exactly when it came. And it came in 12 BC. It's too early. But the next time it came was 66 AD. Who was emperor? Nero. Nero was emperor. And there is the story of the king of Armenia came to Rome with magi. He brought his wise men with him to Rome. The details of this visit are told in excruciating detail in history. There's some historian who sat there and described all the food they ate and the dancers that they watched and what was being said and all of this kind of stuff. And this king had come to pay homage to Nero and saying, the sign in the sky, because it's from the east, where I'm from, means I should be proclaimed king for life. And Nero agreed. You're right. And he had his wise men. Now, what was interesting in the article I was reading said, and so consequently, it is very obvious that Matthew, who was writing the book of Matthew around this time, stole the story of the king of Armenia and Nero and injected it into the Christ story and made up the whole star thing. And I went, oh man, why did you have to do that? Because I found it very fascinating that you have this story outside of the New Testament of magi and a star watching and all of that and causing a group to move from Turkey all the way into Italy because of something in the sky. It was Halley's Comet. And, you know, of course, the skeptical argument is that because it's only found in Matthew, Matthew made it up. Well, if that's the case, you can say a lot of the New Testament is made up. So the argument doesn't hold water to me, but it sure is fascinating to realize that movement due to celestial sightings was not unusual. It also makes you wonder, even though it's been a few hundred years, Daniel was the head of the Magi. You have these Zoroastrianism guys who have echoes of Judaism within their religious conversation. You have Daniel, who we can tell he lived a long time. I mean, there's reference to him even in Ezekiel, when Ezekiel's talking, you know, over in that refugee camp and talking about the prophecy of going back. And the influence that Daniel could have had, the idea of looking for the Messiah, would have been there. They would have understood the Old Testament scriptures, or at least had some kind of concept about them. So could it be that these wise men, all two of them, all three of them, all five of them, all 10 of them, the baker's dozen, all 13 of them, however you want to say it, were of a group of the larger group of magi who were sympathetic to scriptures? Who knows? We don't know. But it's interesting when they get to this area, and I'm going to go away from my notes and back to the text a little bit. After Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, in the days of King Herod, behold, the wise men came from the east and came to... Where did they come to?
Jerusalem.
Not Bethlehem. They went to Jerusalem. What, did they take a right at the when they should have taken a left? I mean, why did they go to Jerusalem? Jesus is in Bethlehem. It's the capital of the area. It's the main region. And then they're asking the questions. Where is he? And they're saying, where is who? What are you talking about? This big event that they have traveled across multiple countries to come to, no one else seems to care about. And then it says, where is he who has been born King of the Jews? We brought this up when we were studying who Herod was. Remember, Herod was an Idumean, so he wasn't even Jewish. He married a Maccabean princess, so to be able to gather in the Jewish people to be on his side. And when Antony and Caesar and Augustus were fighting, ultimately Augustus wins, Herod goes visits, and he is declared King of the Jews by Caesar. He is named King of the Jews. He wasn't born King of the Jews. So to have this come in here, and we'll be looking at this as a little more when we come back from our break the first week of January, but this is the last year or two of Herod's life, and this man is insane at this point in his life. He's killing everybody around him. He's paranoid. He thinks people want to assassinate him. He's killed sons. He's hung wives. I mean, the guy is absolutely out of control. And here comes these smart guys, these, Carl Sagans, come show up at his door and go, so where's the guy who's born the King of the Jews? And he goes, I'm the King of the Jews. What do you mean? There's someone who will take my throne? Well, that's we understand that. Now, because we know the whole story, we can inject back. But they went to Jerusalem, not to Bethlehem. Because they had been watching a TV show called Star Search. Anyway, sorry.
I think they thought that we know what happened. We're not even there. We know that the King of the Jews was born. So the people who live there, they brought him to Jerusalem and made him king.
It's possible. Or where else would you go to find the king? You go to the capital. And how far apart is Bethlehem from Jerusalem? How many miles? Anybody?
Six
miles.
Six.
I mean, your GPS could be off less than 1% and you end up in Jerusalem instead of Bethlehem. I mean, it's not that big of a deal. In fact, if you walked it, it would take you what? 3 hours?
An
And I'm talking if I'm walking it. We've walked together, and I keep saying, can you slow down? Keep up with you. But it's not a big deal. It's just down the street. I mean, in freeway miles, that's Peoria to Indian School on I-17. That's nothing. So they went to the place where the king would normally be, or the prince would normally be. And you have, you have, and Herod hears this, he's troubled, and all of Jerusalem with him. Well, these guys must have been awfully impressive magi for Herod to give them that much credibility. So he assembles all the chief priests and scribes of the people, and you have to stop there and go, who? Who is he assembling? Chief priests and scribes. When that is identified in other places in the New Testament, who are they talking about? The Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Jewish leaders? He goes to the Jewish leaders and ask him where this Christ has been born, this Messiah. And they told him, oh, he was born in Bethlehem, in Judea, because it's written in the prophet Micah 5, verse 2, O you, O Bethlehem, land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, from you shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel. And I find it fascinating that there is no one who says, no, it doesn't mean that. There's no argument here on the prophecy of Micah 5:2. None. There's not even a debate. It is a statement of accepted fact among all of the rulers, of all of the scholars. Everybody is in unified thought that this prophecy means that the Messiah is going to be born in Bethlehem. So it must be that the ones you're speaking about must be in Bethlehem. Now it makes you wonder about this star, because did no one else see it? Or if they did, they just said, whatever, you know, see that all the time. Or were blind to its significance? I don't have an answer for that, but it certainly is fascinating that no one else is talking about some sort of celestial event. Only these magi, only these who have seen it and said, it means we need to go. And they come. Now they're in Jerusalem. And then it says, Herod summoned the wise men secretly after he ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. Herod didn't know when the star had appeared. Of course, he was probably inside all the time. I mean, he probably never went out and looked at the stars. Or if he had his own wise men, they weren't talking about it to him. Well, they're all afraid of him anyway. Right now, nobody goes and brings any sort of news to Herod because you might lose your head over it. So he sends them. Herod sends the wise men to Bethlehem, saying, go and search diligently for the child. And, oh, when you found him, send me an email so I can come. So I can come and worship him too. Well, we all know what he's really wanting to do, because we know what he tried to do later. After listening, they went on the way, and behold, the star that they had seen, which some commentators suggest that the event had stopped and then reappeared. That's an interesting interpretation here. So in other words, this celestial event may have gone away, but they knew it was for them to keep going, and the place that you would go if you're going that direction is Jerusalem. It's the center of the whole region. The next major city is down in Egypt or up in Damascus. So if you're headed that direction, there's really no other place to go. This is the main town, which is why they ended up in Herod's court in the first place. That's a possibility. But notice what happens. It says, The star that they had seen, it when it rose, went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. Wow. That's pretty astounding. It really implies that this was not some sort of stargazing event. It implies that this is a miraculous, one-time sign that has not been repeated. And won't we can't look at our books and our planetariums and go, okay, that's what it looked like, and you know that'll happen again in the year 3022. And those of you who are around will get to enjoy the same thing that the wise men saw. No, the suggestion here is that this was a miraculous event, because if it came to rest, the sky keeps moving. It's always moving. I have an iPad app called Starwalk. It's one of the coolest apps you've ever seen. It takes your GPS coordinate, knows where you're standing, and if you hold it up, it shows you all of the stars on the screen and their names. And you can move around the sky like this, and it moves with you. The screen moves. And you can do this and know what the stars are on the other side of the planet. Where it's happening in, you know, China, what it looks like at stars at night. It's a fascinating application. Because sometimes you go outside and go, oh, that's kind of cool. I wonder what that is. Well, I don't know, Mike. Signs and, you know, the lights blot out half the stars anyway, but you hold up that little app and go, ooh, that's Pisces. Cool. Anyway.
You can dazzle your grandchildren using that.
You can. you got one like it? Okay. It's very, very cool. On your little smartphone, sure. Yeah, you sound very, very wise.
That's
Pisces. Very good. But these guys didn't have one of those. They weren't, and they didn't have anybody to dazzle. They were the ones that were dazzled. It rests over the place where the child was. And then the next verse. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. Which means they were sitting around going, there it is. So there's a reaction to the sight. If that thing had been in front of them for the last month and a half, they would have been bored with it. Kind of like the people of Israel got bored with the pillar of fire that showed up every day. And well, there it is again. Man, alive, I wish they'd turn that thing off. I can't see at night. Or it's blinding. Gee whiz, you know. Why are you sending us manna and this fire stuff? I mean, give us something normal. I mean, that's our attitude after a while with anything. But they have a reaction to seeing it. And they went in and going into the stable. Oh, it doesn't say that. So they went into the house and saw the child with Mary his mother. This is the theory that they were not there at the birth. That more than likely there was a period of time between when the kings arrived and between the birth and when the kings arrived. As much as 2 years, because Herod had all the babies 2 years and younger killed. So he had to have some sort of window to make sure. You know, there's a lot of theories, but one guy wrote something that I'd never thought of before. He said the value of the three gifts, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, very expensive. If you owned those three items, you would have wealth. And yet, when Mary and Joseph went to the temple to purify themselves, the tax they paid was the tax for a poor person. So the theory, this guy is saying, I wonder if they came in the 40 days between the birth and the purification. Or they came, because if they had come at some point around there, they would have had the money, or they came at right after that so that the money's not there. You see the point? Is that you have that now. You know, if you were our family, we would probably not sell those gifts because they would have sentimental value. But, you know, maybe you can borrow against them or something. It would have created an element of wealth to them.
There we go.
Where's the light sensor?
There we go.
The light sensor.
Oh, guys. Well, that's a complaint we can register.
There's light in the east.
Okay. Well, yeah, somebody keep wandering around and wave.
Jim, see the red.
There we go. Yeah, it's you. It's you. Interesting. It is where we're sitting. It's where we're sitting. So the back row has been very quiet because the sensors have got to be out there somewhere.
There's some red.
That's bizarre. Okay. Anyway.
We're not very lively, I guess.
No. Well, I'm up here lecturing. Now, remember, we have the 12 days of Christmas, which is the 12 days after Christmas. So that the theory or the concept is that the wise men come on the 12th day, and we call that 12th day what?
Epiphany.
Epiphany, or manifestation. That is when God is made manifest to these wise men. And so the 6th of January is when we will be able to celebrate that. It's kind of neat. The next class we will teach will be the 5th. Will be right the day right before it.
Now, what were you saying about the purification? 40 days they paid a tax?
Yes, the woman had to pay a tax, and it says the tax was two doves and a lamb. Unless you were not and didn't have enough money, then you could just do two doves. And that's in Levitical law, and it says that Mary and Joseph paid two doves, which suggested they weren't wealthy enough to buy the lambs. Which means they didn't have gold, frankincense, and myrrh with them to trade off. That's the idea. But, and this is, I think, yeah, I'll end it here with this final thought. Is in the verse. Going into the house, they saw the child, they fell down and worshipped him. Wait a minute. They saw, they fell, and they worshiped. Something special is happening here. These are not Jews. The Pharisees and the Sadducees are 6 miles away. They don't even bother to show up. We did have the shepherds show up. That was kind of cool. They had a special message and were really motivated by it. But in the context, you could almost say that the wise men represent the fact that Jesus also came for the Gentiles. Because these men had traveled all this way, spent whatever money they had, and they worshiped him. It says here, this is Charles Spurgeon. It says, they saw this child. It doesn't say that they merely said, oh, there he is, and then ended the matter. They stood still and looked. Perhaps for some minutes they didn't even speak. About his very face, I do not doubt that there was a supernatural beauty. Whether there was a beauty to everyone's eye, I know not, but to theirs, there was most assuredly a superhuman attraction, the incarnate God. They gazed with all their eyes. They looked and looked and looked again. They glanced at his mother, but they fixed their eyes on him. They saw the young child. So too, this morning, let us think of Jesus with fixed and continuous thought. He is God. He is man. He is the substitute for sinners. He is willing to receive all who trust him. He will save and will save this morning every one of us who will rely upon him. Think of him when you're at home this afternoon. Spend the time in thinking upon him. Bring him before your mind's eye. Consider and admire him. Is it not a wonder that God would enter into union with man and come to this world as an infant? He who made heaven and earth hangs on a woman's breast for us. For our redemption, the Word was made flesh. This truth will breed the brightest hope within your soul. If you follow that babe's wondrous life till the end of the cross, I trust you may there be able to give such a look at him that, like when Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness and they who looked on it were healed, so you too may be healed of all your spiritual diseases. Though it is many a year since I first looked to him, I desire to look to Jesus every day, the incarnate God. My eyes swim with tears to think that he who might have crushed me into hell forever became a young child for my sake. See him, all of you, and while seeing, worship. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for our time. Thank you for this opportunity to meditate slowly, intimately, to pull apart and to explore theories and to laugh with each other and just enjoy this blessed word that you gave to us, and ultimately this blessed child that you became on our behalf. Let us worship. Let us contemplate. Let us meditate. Let us make this new again. It's such a common story, it's such a common thing, and yet such an uncommon event, Lord. Thank you. We praise you in Jesus' name. Amen.